Tiny City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny. This Queer Cast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Always worth it. American Airlines. Offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And you're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 152. I'm Peter Maverick.
And I'm Amy Matheny with my feet just barely firmly planted on U.S. soil.
We're about to lift off.
We're embarking to Toronto. We're going to be in a plane together for the very first time.
We are.
If it goes down and we're knocking on wood, it will be the end of podcasting history in Chicago as it is known.
If it goes down, it'll go down in the water. So we'll be fine. You'll totally survive if you fall out of a plane and land in the water.
And then we'd have our own episode of Lost and it'd be really cool. Or Survivor China. You know what's really funny is that's totally not going to happen.
No,
but that you know,
morbid thoughts.
We should be totally precious cargo and have to fly in separate planes. You know. I mean, do you think like Regis and Kelly go in the same plane?
No. We actually at my bank we have rules about that people of a certain rank cannot travel together.
Isn't that interesting?
It is against the bylaws of the bank that they must take distinct flights. Which is, it's just hysterical because when you try and have like a big regional meeting with a lot of fancy people,
right,
they all got to fly in at different times on different planes in different ways and everything. And I'm like, well, in Chicago, the plane isn't the problem. It's the freaking taxi driver. So you might have to make them all take different taxis.
It's totally true. How was your, this was really kind of starting with late last week. I started seeing people Thursday, Friday nights up and down Halsted Street, our neighborhood. But how was the weekend for you? Big Saturday night, Sunday.
Insane. So this weekend, I house managed for the Birds both Friday night and Saturday night. So I was out of my neighborhood and then just getting back to my spot around 10 o'clock at night.
Uh-huh.
Just simply mobbed. I mean, not only has it been mobbed during the day, it's been mobbed during the evening. There's people everywhere. The traffic, I can't tell you, the horns beeping, all that stuff. It's just been crazy. But you know what? It really is like a gay Christmas. It really is a gay holiday. Everybody gets into their thing. They get into their groove. My favorites, though, in years past, I've always been looking for that one costume. That's a great costume. Now it's all about the groups.
It's so weird, isn't it?
It's all I like seeing a group of people. And my winner last night, truly my winner, and this is horribly tasteless, they were a box of tampons.
Are you kidding me?
No, there were like six gay men in like basically a tampon costume, and you know, one of them was used. And they were all just like walking in a gaggle down the street.
And this is gay men wonder why women hate them.
Oh my God.
Or gay men hate women.
Laughing hysterically because instead of like a tail, like if they had a dog costume, where the tail was the string.
Yeah.
So they all had like these ropes hanging off their asses. It was the funniest thing I've seen.
Were they Kotex? Yet. Were they Playtex? Were they?
They didn't have a name.
Why are they Pex? I want to know.
I don't know. What is that about?
I don't know. X marks the spot, I guess. That's where you insert
well,
pawn.
Honey, it's better than, you know, if you rewind like 30 years. Those belts. Can you imagine having to wear all that?
Oh, I wore a belt.
Really?
Many years ago. I remember my mother coming at me with a belt and I was like, what the hell is this thing? And you had to like put it through like a little, I don't know, it had these little metal things and you'd slide the long tail, because of these tails, and you'd slide the long tail through the little belt clip.
Oh my God. It looks like fetish
gear. Not during the day, only at night.
Right, but every time I see that
stuff. I didn't need them, but that's what my mom handed me. I was like, my mother's much older, you know, so I was like, what the hell is this?
Every time I see that stuff now, you know, just like, it's so big. It's so large. Like, what? Oh, it's like not okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, so back to
it's
Halloween.
Like having a bicycle seat between your legs walking around.
I can't imagine how uncomfortable that must have been.
That's weird. You know, honestly, I was going to say Saturday night I was driving back from North and Halsted down at the Steppenwolf garage theater in Steppenwolf space, seeing a play. We're going to actually have an interview later on in the show with the writer and director of Wedding Play with About Face. And I was seeing that and I was with some friends and we got in our car and we thought, well, why don't we go up Sheffield, up Clark, up Halsted and kind of Halloween gawk, you know? And I have to say that I don't know what was going on at the time period in which I was driving back. So that might have been a little early. It was between, I would say, 10:45 and 11:45, because it took about an hour to get home the way we went, because traffic was bad. So traffic was bad. But I have to say the Straits were dressed up far more. And down in the Lincoln Park hood, now people who don't live in Chicago, this would be like yuppie hood, and where DePaul University, Chixies, which is a big... Yeah, and every girl was a hookah of some kind. My favorite were like the four cop hookers. Like they had on, they had on thigh, you know, thigh hugging pantyhose where you could see the skin and see the thigh. They had on little short navy skirts and the jackets with nothing on under them, and handcuffs hanging out, and little hats. And I mean, 4-inch platform or 4-inch heels, spiked heels. And they were all hookahs. I mean, I was, and we came up, we kept coming up the street, and it seemed like the straight people were having much more fun. And we were like, okay, well, this is fun. That means Halstead and Boys Town is going to be crazy. And we came up here and we couldn't drive.
Crickets.
Because it was, because it was, but all I saw were guys dressed up going out in clumps, not dressed up in costumes, just dressed up, just like dressed in nice jeans and a shirt and line outside track and a lying around hydrate, but very few dressed up people. I was very happy to see a Dorothy and a guy that was dressed in gold with a rainbow coming out of his head. I guess it was like the pot of gold.
He was the lotto big Powerball. Exactly. Jackpot.
And we saw one guy who looked like he was totally naked, except that he had in front of, behind his ass and in front of his who's he what's it, he had a black sign that said censored. And that was really cute. Very
I know
funny.
He was freezing last night too. It was really cold. Well, probably what was happening was because when I got home right around 10, people were scampering into the clubs to get there for the costume contests. So I think they were already trying, because there were a lot of costume contests that were happening right around 11 or between 11 and 12.
Okay.
So I think everybody was already where they were, had, getting their drink on and getting ready for the contest on Halstead, because by 1 a.m. when I was waking up by all the, you know, horns and everything, it was just a free for, it looked like the costume parade out there.
Having that this week. Correct. So we will be in Toronto, but
the other thing we were talking about in the costume room, because when I house manage, you know, I get to hang out in the costume room while the show is going on, because I've seen it and it's brilliant. The Birds, you should go, handbagproductions.org, plug, plug, plug. But we were talking about when you go into the one of those, you know how they make those temporary costume stores?
Yeah.
When you go in there, you know, and they have like, this is the nun, this is the... Now the new label is, this is the sexy police officer. This is the sexy devil.
Pirate.
This is the sexy pirate. This is the sexy princess.
The sexy witch.
And I think it's a cop out because the costumes are the same price as the regular princess, but there's like 1/3 the fabric.
Yeah.
But I think that's where all those, this is the sexy cop.
It's like, even thinking what I wanted to wear to Toronto, I was like, well, I kind of want to look a little hot because I'm in a city and I don't know anybody. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm going to be picking anybody up, but you love people to turn their heads.
It's good karma when people look at you and think you're attractive. I fully believe that.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right.
It's good for your karma. They lose a little karma.
Yeah.
But it's good for you.
I was telling my dad, mom yesterday that I was going, you know, to Toronto, and it was very funny. My dad was like, well, don't wear one of those rubber masks. I was like, can you imagine me wearing a rubber mask?
I can't, but now I think you should.
Like a gorilla or something would be so funny. I think that would be hilarious.
It's a pity the Army Navy surplus is closed because we could get those little gas masks and be like some, and this is not an offense to fetish people because I think you guys are brilliant because you guys come up with some inventive shit. But yeah, we could totally be some like fetish freaks. It would be delightful.
You know, my grandmother, she's not going to listen to this podcast. She doesn't know what a podcast is, but my grandmother.
That's the radio.
My grandmother is turning 99 on Halloween on Wednesday.
She was born on Halloween?
Both of my grandmothers were born on Halloween.
How freaky is that?
And as a kid, I used to say I had these witches for grandmother,
no kidding.
I had special powers. But my other grandmother passed away many years ago, but my nanny is turning 99, entering her 100th year, which means she knows what it felt like to be alive in 1907. Well,
no running water, no electricity,
everything different, you know,
no microwave popcorn.
And the great thing is she's really amazingly, her brain is sharper than mine. She remembers more than I do. That's not saying much because my brain is like Swiss cheese, And it's not because of any drugs that I ever did.
I mean, proportionally, she's got a lot more to remember than you do.
Well, she does, but I just mean she can remember people's names that I went to elementary school with. She just remembers stuff that happened last week, last month.
Random.
But she can't remember when I ask her questions like, well, how did you meet Papa? Like, how did you all meet? She's like, oh, Lord, that was so long ago. I don't remember. You know, I'm sure somebody introduced us. I'm like, well, I'd hope so. Right. But
you ran into him. Bam.
Yeah, it came in the mail. But I just don't, you know, it's very, very funny that, you know, she's sharp as a tack and she lives on this farm and she has this life. And I called her yesterday to say I was going to be out of the country, so I probably wouldn't call her till I got back in. But, you know, send her the flowers and her card's already, she already has her card. She hasn't opened it, but she's so funny. So, you know, I'm saying a big 99. Shout out to entering their 100th year this week.
It's my daddy is turning, I think he's turning 69 this year, 68, 69. He's just celebrating his birthday. We're going to Greektown later on today.
Ah, nice.
To do a little celebrating. But I graduated yesterday.
You did?
I did.
From what?
I did from Guitar One. I got to play on the stage at Old Town School.
Very
in the big
cool.
auditorium. Oh my God, the acoustics are amazing.
Awesome.
I felt so professional.
Awesome.
You're playing Eagles.
You had to play Eagles.
Yeah, we played Peaceful, Easy Feeling.
There you go.
And I'm not just really trying to toot my own horn, but we played way better than Guitar One Rep and Guitar Two Intro. We fucking rocked it out, and we were all singing. We were all loud. We were all into it. Half the class didn't show up. Punk-ass bitches. They were scared. But with the people that were there, we were all really loud. And, you know, our teacher was like, she was grinning from ear to ear. She was so proud of us. And then we got down and I was like, okay, Guitar One Rep is going to be way better than us. You know, they know more chords. And they were like quiet and playing a little
song. Because y'all kicked their ass and you scared them. You set the bar high.
But hearing the Guitar Three people and the Guitar Four people, simply amazing. And, you know, it's so freaky because 2 months ago I could not play a guitar.
And now you can.
And now I can. And I'm not a virtuoso.
I love it. It's
and
such
I'm
a
not,
fun instrument, right?
You can take it places.
Are you taking yours to Toronto?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so because I just need to have
you
a little guitar.
You need to get one
withdrawal.
Of those little mini, you can get one of those little mini Martin guitars. They're tiny and they have a pretty damn good sound. They're a traveling
guitar.
We have to go
to the store because I need some expert guidance.
Oh yeah.
So
I can give you some guitar experience.
Because I just bought a ham radio and spent hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars that so I'm not going to do as much shopping in Toronto as I wanted to, but I just bought a ham radio to get me on the hi-fi bands and I'm starting for my general. So that was like a big outlay. You wait till it comes, you'll be like, oh my God, this is an amazing, what do all these buttons do? It's going to be
beautiful.
You're
going to be so excited.
I am. I'm going to talk to people on the other side of the freaking world. How amazing is that? It's just beautiful. Anyway.
You know, speaking of the other side of the world, besides my father saying like I shouldn't wear a rubber mask, you know, and dads are good for advice like that.
They are.
My father said, why don't you get you one of those iPhones? I said, Peter wants me to get an iPhone. And he was like, well, you got an iPhone. You could just email us at the moment's notice if anything came up. And I was like, well, I'm taking my laptop. And he was like, well, yeah, but now it's all small and little and you can just take it and touch the screen. Mm-hmm. It was very, very hip. Leo was,
he's with it. He's got
I said,
pulse
Dad,
on
I don't want to go to, I don't want to go to AT&T yet. I really am still,
yes.
But I'm out from under my Verizon contract. So I could.
So you could.
But
move.
Unfortunately, all the people that I talk to are on Verizon and I get all of that time for free. So
well, it depends. You could.
I'm going to wait a while. The iPhone is not going anywhere, and
no,
I'm not under
it's only
contract.
Gonna get better.
So it's only going to get better, and maybe iPhone will become compatible with
and
with Verizon. That would be beautiful if that could happen.
There's going to be a time where that exact thing happens. It's going to happen. They're saying they have a two year lock.
Right.
Right now, nobody knows what the future is going to hold, but I can't imagine because the Razer was the same way. The Razer was locked into one maker and then boom, it just exploded all over the place. So you got time. It's not going anywhere.
Can we talk some Mac gossip?
I was going to say, speaking of Macs, you know, Leopard is out now.
Leopard is out.
And
whoa.
I read, I use Google Reader to read a shitload of blogs. I mean, I think there's like 80 or 90 blogs in my Google Reader right now.
Yep.
And I read the unofficial Apple weblog, TUAW. Yeah. It's written by, I think, a bunch of people in Chicago because I hear that there's, well, I don't hear. I read this one guy making Chicago references all the time. So what they did is they did 24 hours of Leopard. Each hour, they posted a post on another feature.
Oh, nice.
And I was seriously salivating as I'm reading all this stuff. Like, what? It does who? It does, oh my God.
It takes your emails and will throw them places and remember addresses and phone numbers.
It knows shit in the
It's
going to
be like my TiVo and I'm so excited. It's going to know me better than I know me.
It's so great. It's so robust in what's coming. So I decided, okay, it is really time now. Looking at all this, I'm happy to start Mac shopping. And you know what? I'm not going to get a PowerBook. I'm totally going to get a desktop. I'm totally going to get an iMac because I have an iPhone.
Super sexy. And you have an iPhone.
If I didn't have an iPhone, I would want a laptop. But I'm sitting here in my mind thinking everything that I need to do on the mobile, I just use my iPhone for it.
Yeah.
Mobile email, mobile web surfing. I Twitter a lot. Again, I've told you folks this out there. If twitter.com/PeterMaverick, you want to follow me, I would love to follow you. Do it. Make it happen. But I just wanted an iMac. Plus, it is $1,000 cheaper. Let's just put it out there.
Yeah.
It's $1,000 cheaper.
This is so, why you and I, remember we had this whole conversation.
I know.
It was probably show like 130 something. And I've been talking about it for that long. And I'm still being patient. I am still breathing into this experience that is going to become my new Mac experience. I have been with Mac since day one. I had the little tiny classic, Mac Classic. I think it was called a Mac Classic. It was like a little square, tall tower box. No color. It was the ugliest shade of beige you have ever seen. It looked like the thing was just dirty.
It looked like baby food.
It was, yeah, it did. It was just not attractive. But I've been with them since then. Then I had a Performa. Then I had the first iBook. What was it? It was the blueberry thing. And then I had, I've had it all. So I am breathing into what this new experience for me will be. I did hear a Mac rumor. Because I have a friend who is about to enter the Mac world for the first time in her life.
My friend Pat Kane,
who wrote Pulp.
Oh, yes.
And we were together last night and we were talking about Leopard. And she was like, I'm finally doing it, gals. I think I'm going to go Macintosh. And we were talking about it. She goes, well, I have been reading up, because she's like you. Mm-hmm. She's like a tech geek. And she's been reading up. And she said that at Mac Rumor or MacRumor.com. There is rumor that if we all just hold on, like everybody's saying, don't buy a laptop, don't buy a laptop, don't buy a laptop, because they may start having touch screen like the iPhone.
Oh, like a
capability,
a tablet PC. That's actually
like
what we
call big tablet PC.
Yeah,
that their new laptops may have that as soon as the holidays. Oh. There may be an announcement. So one, meaning Amy, is waiting and breathing into.
Yeah.
Her Lotus position on the Macintosh.
I really, really, really need to kick this podcast up into high gear with video. And I know you guys love the videos that we do.
Seeing what I look like right now.
But
we both have on, we're going to be candid. We both have on baseball caps. His is backwards. Mine is forward.
Yeah, we're both wearing
polar fleece in some varietal. We're in a soft varietal.
We're both wearing track pants.
We're both wearing track pants. Now, take out of the image of the fact that I was wearing leather pants and a bustier. And Peter was
wearing a giant spiked cock ring.
Oh, I was going to say you're wearing Prada.
Else. Oh, okay.
You sound very sweet and corporate and sophisticated and Prada wearing.
Honey, the devil wears Prada.
Ooh.
So it's what it is. But I want.
But
I
Leopard,
think I'm
we're
gonna
going
have to
into
get an
Leopard.
iMac. I think I'm going to have to get an iMac now.
Well, if you get one, then I'll truly get into the super sexiness of it, and then I'll follow suit. I'm a follower in the tech world. I am not a leader, and that's okay.
That's okay.
And most of my life, I'm a leader. But in the tech world, I like to be a follower.
That's okay. That's all right.
It's a good place to be.
And at the end of the day, given all the Walt Mossbergs of the world, do you know who that is?
No.
Wall Street Journal, he's the big tech reviewer.
Oh, there you go.
Walt Mossberg likes it. The world likes it. Basically, it's this horrible, horrible oligarchy. Oh, I used a big word.
That was a very big word.
Right. But anyway.
So early on this Sunday morning.
I know. And you heard the jazz when you came in, right? Since it's my Sunday morning ritual. It's jazz
we're
and like
some,
house
we're having Sunday brunch podcasting, which we don't do now.
The jazz brunch. Oh, wait. No, that's WNUA. That's like trademarked. We can't use that. So scratch that. Rewind. So if Walt likes it and all these other people like it, they really are the pioneers. They're the people that I follow. So I do pay attention to what they do about it. But I think I had my iPhone before Walt's review. So,
well, comments. I want to know if anybody's got the iMac, has got the MacBook Pro, has got the MacBook. There are some people are saying the MacBook is where the touchscreen thing. So don't get the MacBook Pro right now. Who knows? But we're all entering a Leopard world. So even if you have an old Mac, you should get Leopard and let it be fabulous for you.
The G4 processor and above. Will convert. I don't think there's G3 support, but I could be wrong about that. So from G4s and up, you can definitely do it, and it doesn't need to be Intel. It is a universal binary, so you do not need the Intel to get there.
So
I'm excited.
Sexy language to me in the morning.
I'll speak.
Speaking about my binary.
I'll speak geek.
So I can't believe that we are having this wonderful opportunity. Tourism Toronto. Toronto has been a big supporter of ours on the podcast and supporter of Windy City Gay Idol. And they called me and said, hey, would you like to come to Toronto? And I said, sure. And they said, we're going to take you and show you a fabulous time. And I said, can I bring Peter? And they said, yes. And I said, fabulous, because I got to travel with my Pete.
Yeah.
So we're heading up on American Airlines. We're just supporting out all of our supporters. This is how we keep it in the family,
absolutely,
folks.
We'll be drinking Bud Light on the plane.
That's right. We have choices, and we support those who support us. So we're flying on American, heading up to Toronto. The next podcast you hear will be from mine and Peter's
live
bedroom or
from
somewhere.
Our Toronto boudoir, steal Wanda Wisdom's moniker.
I'm so excited that everyone I have told this past week, because really it doesn't become reality to me until the week before I leave. Even though I'd been planning a trip for months, it would only be a reality like days before I leave. So I've been talking and telling people I'm not going to be here next week. I'll be in Toronto. And everybody says the same thing. Oh, I love Toronto. It's the most amazing city. You're going to have such a good time. And
So you've never been?
I've never been to Canada. Now, I have to say my big sad thing is that tonight all of the Stratford Festival ends.
Yeah.
Any of the plays. So, because Peter and I really wanted to see a play because we both love theater. And I've always wanted to go to Stratford. But this will be a nice trip that I can get all the sightseeing out. So the next time I go, it can be purely about going to many plays.
Soaking up the theater scene and the food, because the food is amazing. But we're going to get to tap into a lot of that.
Oh, you know, you and I'll be eating before and after when they present us with meals.
Absolutely. So if you have the chance to travel just a little bit today on the show, we have Larry Peloso, who is the creator of this big giant event that they have. It
has
already begun.
Festival.
Yeah, it's called Halloweek in Toronto, and Larry is on. He's going to tell us about it. We're going to chat with him about things to do and what you can see up there. So if you're close, it's probably worth the drive to get out there. And if you're not close, put this on your calendar for next year, because this is Toronto is a destination city. It is a destination city. If you have not been there, you need to go. I mean, truly, it's so close. It's our cousin. It's right there.
It's right there. And it's where Chris Folk was.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm so excited to walk down the streets and
see all the soak up the Canada. And you know what? People from Canada are just so nice.
Yeah.
They're just so nice. Because, you know, obviously the country hasn't had a war with anybody. So there you go.
Somebody told me I had to call it Toronto. Toronto. Is that how they say it?
I don't know.
I say Toronto. And
I do.
My friend was like, no, if you're really from there, they call it Toronto. Or something. I don't know.
We'll ask.
I have to listen.
We'll listen. But you know what will happen? Because for both of us, it happens. We just switch linguistically as soon as we start hearing an accent. So I'll probably be about things. But I don't think I'll get into the eh. That's not me.
Eh.
No.
Cheers.
I'm more of a don't you know.
Don't you know.
Don't
cheers.
You know.
They all say cheers. And also later on in the show, I'm going to be taking you down to the Steppenwolf Garage, where the new About Face Theater, which is Chicago's award-winning gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgender theater company, has a new play called Wedding Play. And it's really fantastic. I saw the preview last night. It is funny. If you are a Chicago theater person, you will very much enjoy this. If you have ever written a play, directed a play, acted in a play, been involved in that weird, unique
world.
Family dynamic world, especially if you're gay or lesbian, this play will resonate to you. So I hope many people in the theater community will come and see the show. But I went to catch a preview because I'm coming to opening when we get back from Toronto. But Eric Rosen on the show with us, the writer and director of Wedding Play as well. So it's a big fat show for this high holiday week. And we'll be back with news and more after this.
1963. Picture four guys under a street lamp with a sound and a song and a dream that would rock the world. Jersey Boys, the musical phenomenon about Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, is coming to Chicago. It's Broadway's greatest success story. Four blue-collar kids working their way from the streets of Newark to the heights of stardom. The American dream never sounded better. Take the journey across the country, up the charts, and behind the music. Jersey Boys arrives here October 6th, and it's already been extended through next April. This new block of seats is on sale now, so get yours today. Oh, what a night. Jersey Boys, coming to the LaSalle Bank Theater. Call 312-902-1400 or visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club.
Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative. Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of October 29th, 2007, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Critics and audiences love Forbidden Broadway, the fall down funny smash hit musical at the Royal George Theater. The Chicago Tribune raves, it's the funniest, fastest 90 minutes in Chicago. Forbidden Broadway playing now through January 13th. For tickets, call 312-988-9000 or go to Ticketmaster.com.
Writers Theater presents the world premiere of Evan Smith's The Savannah Disputation. Time Out Chicago raves, it's a sneak attack of religious interrogation disguised as an episode of The Golden Girls. For tickets to The Savannah Disputation at Writers Theater, log on to writerstheater.org or call 847-242-6000.
Northlight Theater presents The Miser, a classic comedy with a contemporary twist. A cast of Chicago all-stars headlines this tale of true love between a man and his money. With forbidden romance in the air and the family treasure buried in the backyard, it's a hilarious race to see who will come out on top. For tickets to The Miser, visit northlight.org.
Innovation, sensuality, and creativity will be on display as Complexion's contemporary ballet takes the stage at the Auditorium Theater of Roosevelt University for two nights only, November 10th and 11th. Tickets to Complexion's contemporary ballet are available through Ticketmaster and at the Auditorium box office.
Are you depressed, repressed, undressed? Court Theater has the cure. They will have you feeling better in no time with gay playwright Joe Orton's sexy and ferociously playful farce, What the Butler Saw. Sean Graney directs the provocative comedy now playing through December 9th. For tickets to What the Butler Saw, visit courttheater.org.
Remy Bumpo Theater Company presents Stephen Dietz's Fiction. Husband and wife novelists find the foundation of their marriage shaken after reading the secrets in each other's diaries. Playing now through November 4th at the Victory Gardens Greenhouse Theater, 2257 North Lincoln Avenue. For tickets to Fiction, call 773-871-3000 or visit RemyBumpo, that's with two P's, .org.
About Face Theater presents Wedding Play, a world premiere written and directed by Eric Rosen. Set in the world of Chicago theater, Wedding Play blends mystery and comedy and might just be a confession to murder. Playing now at the Steppenwolf Garage, call 312-335-1650 or visit aboutfacetheater.org for tickets.
Altar Boys is a hilarious, wholly inspiring musical comedy about five small-town boys, Matthew, Mark, Luke, Juan, and Abraham, trying to save the world one screaming fan at a time. The Tribune says this production is brilliant. You'll laugh your socks off. Altar Boys is playing now at the Drury Lane Water Tower Theater. Visit Altar Boys, that's boys with a Z, Chicago.com.
For more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius. Today we salute you, Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
While lesser men strapped on skates and played hockey, you donned skin-tight leotards and a teeny cowboy hat and learned figure eights.
Going round and round.
You practiced and practiced, hoping, knowing, someday you'd be good enough to wear a giant puppet costume and skate in an ice show.
Welcome to the big time.
Skate perfectly and you're a crowd pleaser. Mess up and fall on your butt and you're still a crowd pleaser.
Oh!
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh Titan of the Tights. You may never wear a medal, but sequins are shiny too.
Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
And this is your Windy City Queercast News.
Presidential hopeful Barack Obama will be joined by anti-gay gospel singer Donnie McClurkin for a three-day South Carolina tour. In 2002, McClurkin wrote on a Christian website that he struggled with homosexuality after being molested, but, quote, experienced God's power to change my lifestyle. Also this week, a man identified as Rob claimed he had sexual relations with the Grammy-winning ex-gay gospel singer McClurkin during the height of his vocal anti-gay period.
The San Francisco-based Episcopal Diocese of California recently approved same-gender blessings. Episcopal churches in the Bay Area can now offer same-sex blessings on a trial basis.
Atlanta police report that anti-gay slurs were used during an October 19th drive-by shooting at a group of gay men standing outside of a local gay bar. Police are still searching for suspects. One man was injured.
Leaders of the most Russian-speaking Watchmen of the Walls movement insisted they don't hate gays or condone violence during a recent speech at Seattle's Lynwood Convention Center. The Southern Poverty Law Center had released a report calling the Western-based Watchmen an anti-gay movement and a serious threat.
J.K. Rowling, author of the Harry Potter series, recently confirmed rumors that one of the key characters, Master Wizard and Headmaster of Hogwarts, Albus Dumbledore, is gay. Rowling explained that the wizard had been in love with his rival, Gellert Grindelwald.
Singer Alicia Keys said she understands rumors that she is a lesbian because at the start of her career, she was definitely, quote, rough around the edges.
During an appearance on The Tyra Banks Show, Lance Bass said that he realized he was totally gay after turning down having sex with his ex-girlfriend Danielle Fischel, formerly of Boy Meets World. Fischel also appeared on the show, complete with her Lance box.
Oh, gosh.
Stalker of relationship memorabilia.
And there is a new cast member to Grey's Anatomy. Actress Brooke Smith, recently on Weeds as well, is abrasive cardiothoracic surgeon Dr. Erica Hahn. Last week, she went nose-to-nose with Sandra Oh's Christina. Owen Smith played lovers off-Broadway in the 90s play Stop Kiss. Perhaps Dr. Hahn will reveal a new twist of liking girls on this primetime soap. Mm. That's all the show's missing is a gay character, and Smith told Grey's producers that she is open to that.
And that's your Windy City Queercast News. Well, folks, if you, like us, want to get freaky in Toronto...
And I do.
One of the best times to let your hair down, or wear a wig, or dye it green, or maybe even wear that bald cap you've been hiding...
I want to be Britney.
You want to be Britney?
Yeah.
With the bald cap, dirty girl. Is during Halloween, a week-long festival happening in Toronto. Larry Peloso, the founder of Halloween, is with us to talk all about what's going on. Hey, Larry.
Hey, hello.
Hey, Larry. We cannot wait to be in Toronto with you guys for Halloween. How fun is this going to be?
Oh, it's going to be great. We're really excited about it.
So I have a really dumb question to start with. Is Halloween the same in Canada as it is in the States?
I think it's probably fairly similar. You know, when you think that Halloween dates back, 2,000 years ago to the ancient Celtic festivals and then slowly evolved in the 7th century with the Christianity giving their little, you know, stint of All Saints Days. And it really didn't come to North America. It came here and I think back around the 19th century, the European immigrants brought it across. Of course, as we love to do, we had to give it our own little twist. And it is what it is today. But I always felt that no one really took full advantage of Halloween. When I started doing my research on it, I couldn't find anywhere in the world that really seemed to be the place to go for Halloween. And I thought, what a better place to make it all happen than in Toronto. We are surrounded by pumpkin farm country fields in every direction. And we've got the perfect weather for Halloween. And Church Street in Toronto has had a history of for Halloween for many, many years. And I thought, you know, we've turn Pride Day into Pride Week. Why not turn Halloween into Halloween?
Well, it is the high holidays for us gays, you know.
It is. It's when everybody can wear drag without fear of, exactly. of any repercussions.
One day is not good enough.
No.
No, it isn't. So tell us about the week. Now, there is just a laundry list of stuff going on. There's stuff going on all over the city. But give us the quick overview, and then we'll dive into some details.
Okay. Well, it all starts tomorrow. It kicks off with our Pumpkin Culinary Festival, and all the restaurants in the Church Wellesley Village are going crazy with trying to one-up each other with, you know, the best pumpkin soups and pumpkin cheesecakes and pumpkin pies and pumpkin seed salad dressings, et cetera. So that kicks off tomorrow as well. All the businesses and restaurants have gone crazy, you know, making their establishments looking very, very scary with cobwebs and all sorts of jack-o'-lanterns and masks on their staff, et cetera. We've decorated the street itself. It's not just the people, but the street itself. We have all these lit pumpkins that are hanging from all the telephone poles up and down the street and banners that are announcing it's Halloween and the dates and information and the logo of the festival. So that kicks off tomorrow. It leads us right into the weekend where we have a special children's program. We have the Orange Balls, which is our series of costume parties that are taking place at different clubs and bars in the Church Wellesley neighborhood.
Wait a minute. Say that again. The Orange Balls.
Yeah. Yes. Well, We called the orange balls. We thought, why not?
Let them hang out. Let it hang out. Let it all hang out.
We thought, you know, different cities. Montreal's got black and blue ball, and Miami's got the white ball. Well, we've got not just one, but we've got numerous orange balls.
Lovely.
I love it.
So there's lots of fun. You can check out some of the different parties going on the website. And then on the Sunday, there's also the Jack-O-Lantern competition, which is a pumpkin carving contest, and it's happening at all the outdoor patios up and down the street. And we've had numerous groups and artists who have submitted their entries, and they'll be out on Sunday, and you can watch them right there as they're carving their pumpkins. And we have a series of judges who are going to select the best in different categories, which will go on display for the rest of the Halloween week. And then it all comes down to Boo, which is our big block party on October 31st. We're closing the entire street down. We're putting in a great big stage. We're putting in a catwalk so you can get up there and strut your costume in front of everyone. There's entertainment that will be going on from the stage. And it includes Chicago's very own Gay Idol winner, Dan Carey.
I'm so excited.
We've invited up to perform.
Yay.
And we've got, oh my God, we've got the Monster Mash performance. We've got a group that's doing a huge production of Thriller. And we've got you know, DJs and drag queens performing a costume contest. We've got $10,000 worth of prizes. I think it's just going to be an amazing finale.
Oh, it's going to be so exciting.
It's so
fantastic. You know, I just want to have a sign in my front yard that just says Boo Girl, because I saw one of those one time in Tennessee, and I want one that just says Boo Girl.
Boo Girl. So I was poking around on the website, and for folks who are interested, seriously, if you are in the Midwest, it's so easy to get to Toronto. You can just hop on a plane. You can totally make it a last minute trip.
Come with
you can
Peter and
drive.
I.
Drive. You can pop up there. But the website is halloweek.ca. We're going to have that in the show notes. So it's super easy. But I was poking around on there, and there is, now Larry, tell me about this. There's something called a drag swap. What is that? I'm so intrigued.
This is, I think, something that's actually going to really become a key event. It's starting off very small this year, just some of the drag queens pulling out some of their old outfits that they just don't want to wear anymore or can't fit it anymore. Did I say that? No.
So I don't even need to bring a costume. I should just come up and just let them dress me in drag.
Get old wigs, heels, etc. And they're going to be hosting this at Cruz Tango, which is one of the bars on Church Street, so that people who just can't get it together to get a costume can hop on down there on Wednesday night and see if they can find something to wear. But I think what we're with next, the next 2 years, Halloween leading is going to hit Friday and Saturday night, respectively. It's going to something we'll probably do the weekend before to give people lots of time to go out and get a costume. So we'll see what the drag queens can pull together this year. They're very.
It sounds like a gigantic garage sale for drag
queens. I want
them
on the runway to do a transformation of me. That, I will be the guinea pig. I trust them with my life implicitly.
My God.
I will be ever more fabulous after than I am before.
She's going to come back to Chicago with green hair and pumps up to there.
That's right. And some fishnets, some fake chicken cutlets around strapped to my chest. You know, it's going to be good.
Some chicken cutlets. If she doesn't have any breasts.
I'm getting my camera up for this one.
Absolutely. So, you go.
No, I was just going to ask, what do you think are going to be the big costumes of the year? Are you kind of able to tell with what you're hearing shop owners and
oh
I'm sure.
Oh, my God. That's very, very interesting. I'm sure we'll see a lot of variations of Britney Spears.
Yep.
Poor thing has really had it all, but I think that no one's going to miss the opportunity to have some fun with her.
Maybe
I think
Senator
Martha
Craig?
Stewart was one of the big ones last year. I've never seen so many knitted.
That's right. That's right.
kimono, what do you call those things?
Caftans.
Caftans, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not quite sure, but I am always amazed by the imagination of people that come out. And I'm not talking just like makeup and costumes. I'm talking about full constructed structures on their heads. Groups. I think the groups is one of my favorite. When I see a group of people and they've all pulled it together to be flight attendants or, the Musketeers or something like that.
The Golden Girls.
The Golden Girls.
The Golden Girls, yeah. And we're going to have categories. You know, we're going to have prizes from... for individual efforts as well as group efforts in the costume contest.
Now, on Church Street, are there a lot of little shops that, you know, Peter and I are flying, I might not want to take much with me. Can I go out on Halloween Day or the day before and do a little shopping in the hood and put myself something fabulous together?
You should be able to. If not in the hood, certainly in the over. We're only one street over from Yonge Street, which is the main drag. Everything from, you know, drug stores to... department stores to even like hardware stores are carrying Halloween costumes this year. It's just incredible. It's like you can't go anywhere without being reminded, hey, it's Halloween. Hey.
And how about you, Larry? What are you dressing at? Can you disclose such information?
I've done Marilyn Monroe for several years now because it's just so easy. I just, you know.
Well, I mean, cheekbones like yours.
Take out my white wig, and I've got the best pair of white heels that you have ever seen that I've found. We have used clothing stores here called Value Village, what we call it Value Village.
Value Village.
I found the greatest pair of white pumps that I just, you know, they're so comfortable, and they give me an extra, 6 inches.
Ooh.
I get to see above everybody. So I don't know what I'm going to be wearing this year. I better get to it. I've been so busy working on this event, I haven't really had a chance to think about that yet.
But, well, if you decide to swap out Marilyn, maybe Peter or I will go as Marilyn this year, just to keep your homage alive.
Okay.
I'm sure we'll run into a handful of them.
Well, no, Larry Peloso is the founder of Hallow Week. It is the first inaugural year. It's going to be a big, big party with, of course, our very own Chicago Windy City Gay Idol, Dan Carey. Plus, Peter and I will be there doing lots of coverage. We'll hopefully have some videos and interviews and all kinds of stuff. So, guys, we're set out for a party. If you are anywhere near Toronto or can get yourself to Toronto next week, get there. Get there if you can. And, Larry, thank you so much, and we will see you in Toronto.
Yes, and be ready. It'll be very scary.
Boo, girl. Thanks, Larry.
Okay, cheers.
It's 7 o'clock in the...
Hi, everybody. This is Nicole Wells, and you are listening to Amy and Peter on... WindyCityQueerCast.com. Yeah.
I let the hands of time pass me by. I gotta flip the script.
Eric Rosen has written a new play for About Face Theater using themes from his own life, bringing the comedy, drama, and dare we say the whodunit of his story to the stage. As artistic director of About Face Theater for over a decade and with critical hits such as Dream Boy and Winesburg, Ohio, Wedding Play is the must-see for the fall of the gay community. And I'm so happy to be sitting here backstage at the Steppenwolf Garage with you. Eric, how are you?
Hi, Amy.
You don't look any worse for the wear, and you're close to... audiences filling the space.
I had sort of a day off yesterday in which I slept a lot.
Yeah?
Yes.
That's helpful for the artistic mind.
It is.
Sleep and dreaming a bit. So tell everybody, what is the story of Wedding Play?
Wedding Play is about a theater company very much like our own, in which a playwright has written a play in which he seems to confess to the murder of his wife and child because he's written a play about a theater company in 1938 Cairo that is putting on a play in which the playwright does confess to the murder of his wife and child. And the contemporary story, that's not complicated enough, the contemporary story is really about a playwright who leaves his boyfriend of many years to marry the star actress in his theater company because she gets pregnant and he wants to be the father of the child. And then she and the baby die mysteriously. And then everyone takes this play that he's written about it to be a confession.
Of?
Murder.
Of murder.
Yes.
So let's talk about, you know, you're known...
Just like all the murders I've done.
All the murders. All the... It's Halloween time. It's quite a scary, bootastic play for exactly. About face theater. So you're primarily known as an adapter of, mm-hmm. of novels or poetry with Whitman, mm-hmm. with Dream Boy, which I mentioned. That may have been something many people remember is almost the big spark that started
sure.
about face theater. And then Winesburg, Ohio, which was here at Steppenwolf. Mm-hmm. A few years ago, but they say you're supposed to know, write what you know,
yeah.
And I know that you've pulled a lot of aspects of your own life into this story. Let's not talk about anything that would be incriminating to you, but what things have you pulled from? I mean, obviously you have a theater company, and there is this role that you take.
There are other resonances. The play is really, I mean, it's very much about what it's been like to make theater over the last 15 years in Chicago. All the families that you form, the kind of maybe the darker side of ensemble when we get these kind of twisted relationships. But it's really, I mean, to tell the truth, it's really about, at its heart, it's about an experience I had with my sister who has an autoimmune disorder called antiphospholipid syndrome. And she was really, really sick for a long time, and I took care of her. And the experience one night when she got really sick one night and almost died in my apartment, and the next day I was sitting in the hospital and I wrote the first scene for this play that actually survives almost verbatim what I wrote down. So then it became a plot and a story that had nothing to do with my sister or that experience, but at its heart, it's really, I think in a way I've been sort of literary adapting my own life to the stage, taking this really, really scary experience and then trying to figure out what it meant and what it meant in the context of making plays, and how, you know, the way that, for me, the theater was, my first impulse was to write it down, and write it down for the theater, and now, 3 years later, I'm seeing it realized, and it's very strange.
Was that terrifying to write that, I mean, obviously the experience of your sister was terrifying, but to sit down and write that scene, and then come to the theater and say, I think I have something, and it's really based on my own experience, because I know, I mean, I can imagine knowing the plays that you've done, that Dream Boy being, living a time in North Carolina, having some sort of Southern heritage in the coming out process. Whitman, I know, was a poet that really spoke to you as a gay man and as someone who is a lover of words and language. But this was really going to be just something emanating straight from you and your own inspiration of,
well, and because
of how you experienced your life.
Yeah, and I think in a way I invented the fiction of the play to contain this real truth, you know, that the play is about a guy who writes literary adaptations and tries to place himself in other worlds. So the play he's writing is actually set in 1938 Cairo.
Right.
So
it couldn't be any more different than you.
Yeah, exactly. So, but he writes about a theater company, and he writes in the way that all of my plays have been thinly veiled truths behind elaborate fictions. Do you know what I mean? That I've sort of found the heart of stories that I love, like Dream Boy, like Winesburg, and placed myself in them, and now I'm doing the reverse. I'm taking a story that is really true, and I'm placing it in the context of a pretend fiction.
So you say in some materials that were provided for us when we are going to interview you, that you say that Wedding Play is about all the plays we've made and the passion and madness of telling stories, and about the way tragedy can be overcome through art. So how has tragedies throughout your life been overcome by art, or has art really just given you a way to live through anything that happens to you in your life?
That's a great question. I don't want to give this play is actually very funny, and it, in a way, tragedy is overcome through art because we can make things that seem too painful to be believed in real life. You put them in the theatrical context, and you can make jokes about them, and you can, you know, the relief is, and you can make it bigger and broader and ideal in a way, and then see what, I don't know, see the real in the context of the fake. If I don't know, that's not really the answer to the question, but I do believe
that's what fairy tales are in a way to us, and what all, you know, some of the basic storytelling is when it, you know, something tragic happens, but we're going to dress it up, add some colors to it.
Yeah, and then
make
the
it palatable so
always,
you can be moved, but you don't have to experience it in the real sense.
Yeah, well, and you experience it in a heightened sense, right? Because
right.
It's like, because you know it's not really real. The fairy tale, you know, they go into the woods, and the mother is dead, and someone's going to get eaten.
Right,
that,
right.
That it's hard. It's a story. There's terror in those stories, but then we cloak it in a kind of a mystery. And that's apt about this play. It is a mystery. Mm-hmm. And I've cloaked a kind of a real event in a lot of mystery, in the way I tell the story and the way it works, both to kind of make it containable and to also, you know, to let out the feeling of what really happened. You know, I watch this play sometimes and I get so emotional because even things that have nothing to do with real life, like there's one thing, I keep joking about this play that About Face fans will need a scorecard because there's so many internal references to everything we've done. Every play we've ever done is sort of gets some reference. There's a line borrowed from one show. There's an image borrowed from another. There are funny sight gags that involve, like, as if the plays they were doing are old About Face plays. So someone walks across with the giant water skirt from Whitman. It's a prop between scenes that he's carrying from place to place. So there is, you know, the sense of lots of really real things buried inside this fiction, you know, that I think will be really fun for people who know our work really well.
Well, and you have some really, you know, you have a couple of people on the stage, obviously a lot of people behind the scenes who have been with you for a number of productions, and just some really great comedic actors. I mean, people have the facility for comedy and for real honest storytelling. Talk about some of the cast and that people might...
Yeah,
I mean,
we've got kind of like About Face favorites, Leslie Bevan, who was, of course, played Bing Cherry in Pulp, and Kate Swift in Winesburg, Ohio, and she sort of gets to do both of those kinds of things in this play, and she's kind of, you know, one of everyone's favorite About Face actresses, and not only that, there's a scene referenced from when I was in graduate school that actually she was in. Leslie and I went to school together, so I actually took a scene that she and Scott Duff were in together, my first scene for directing class for Frank Galati, has been transformed and now represents a play within a play within a play inside this play.
That's
and
cool.
So Leslie, you know, just lived through all the versions of it. And then
tell me when the people are paying to come in here.
Ben Sprunger, who of course was in Take Me Out and in Whitman.
Beautiful boy.
Say Love Satan, very handsome Ben Sprunger.
Very cute.
Plays the really nasty ex-boyfriend, sort of a bitter failed actor, and so it's all the actors get to draw on a lot of their life experiences of the frustrations of being an actor in Chicago. Joe Dempsey, who's one of the funniest guys in town, plays a kind of prototypical me, the artistic director of a theater company who's about to lose his mind, and he does a very good me impersonation, which makes me laugh. Craig Spidel, who's a genius, plays the playwright's father in a really beautiful part, and Kareem Bandiali, who's a gorgeous, gorgeous actor, plays the star of the play within the play, of the Egyptian play. It's really brilliant. It's the cast.
So
and Sean Cooper, of course, plays me.
And Sean Cooper, of course, plays you. So when you're writing and directing, you must need an objective eye. I mean, you must need somebody. I mean, are there people that you trust to come in and kind of... When it's so personal, I mean, you'd have to really trust these people to, you know, look at your child in almost more of a sense than something that maybe you're just directing somebody else's work.
Yeah.
Because then you can kind of be objective and you can stand outside of it, possibly,
I
if you're just directing.
13 or 14 regular plays for every one that I write and direct.
Yeah.
And I could only do this every... It's been 4 years since I wrote Winesburg, and I think that's a good pace. I think one every 4 or 5 years is plenty. It's hard. It's really, it's intense. It takes a long time. We've been working on this play for almost 3 years in workshops with a lot of these actors. I've had a lot of collaboration from my dear friend Jessica Thebus has been in at every step of the way. She's sort of consulted with me on the project, and she is my most trusted outside eye. Then all of, you know, I've got our company members of About Face are flying in from out of town to come to previews, and I've invited a lot of people to see it in advance because I don't really know what it is. You know, tomorrow night we start previews, and I'm very, you know, I'm very anxious to see what it's like.
Yeah. It'll evolve, I'm sure, during previews. So let's, I want to talk about kind of the origins of About Face Theater, since people listening to this, you know, may not be in the Chicago area at all. But, you know, why... 10, 11 years ago,
12
years ago,
half, like,
good dozen, yeah. Did, you know, why did you start a gay and lesbian theater company? How do you think it's changed with just theater in this city in general? And I mean, it's kind of a loaded question. Let's start with why did About Face Theater?
Well, it was really the brainchild. Kyle Hall, who I founded About Face with, and I were in graduate school together. And it was right after Angels in America and just before Matthew Shepard, which was a really interesting moment in gay history in America. And the AIDS epidemic had come to a head and was just about to, but just before protease inhibitors. So everything was sort of up for grabs. And there was all of a sudden visibility, and we were on TV and on Broadway and in this open way that had felt unprecedented.
Lesbians were chic.
Lesbians were cool. Still are.
Still are.
It's hard to remember what it was like, what the world was like in 1994. Yeah. But it was really different, and we started the theater as a way to respond to that cultural change, because we thought, what if we could be at the avant-garde of an artistic movement, not for gay people to sit around with other gay people and celebrate and make, you know, to create space for ourselves outside of mainstream culture, but what if we created a gay theater that represented our experience to a really broad audience?
What has that grown to? I mean, just to give people an idea, we're now at like a 1 point something.
We're one of the 10 largest nonprofit theaters in the city limits of Chicago. We work here at Steppenwolf all the time. You know, our work has been seen by well over 200,000 people over the last 12 years. Our work gets seen on Broadway, tours the world. Our productions, we create mostly new plays that get produced all over the place. I was just out in L.A. doing a new play. Tomorrow, in 2 weeks, we start previews of Pulp in Cleveland.
And it's also incredible, too, because when you look at the cachet of writers back when you all were adapting, you know, I mean, working with Michael Cunningham before the Hours was made into a film, and before the Pulitzer, and working with Moises Kaufman shortly thereafter.
There's a funny joke in this play where the artistic director says, "Do you know that I know 5 Tony Award winners personally?"
Yeah. Well, you do your collaborations with Mary Zimmerman from Metamorphoses, who's worked with the company. Yeah. So, I mean, we've really been surrounded by
We've really tried to make it a great home for the best Chicago-based artists and the best national artists to do the most interesting work possible. And it's been a very boutique idea. It's not, we don't do work that's always, you won't usually do plays that people know about in advance. They're almost always new. So we were really about the art and the creation of the work so that we can preserve the next idea about what it means to be gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender in America. So we can always be a step ahead of the culture. Do you know what I mean? So,
yeah. Where do you think gay theater is, though, today? I mean, I'm saying gay, queer theater, I guess. I mean, and do you consider... I would assume now that we would consider About Face Theater queer theater. We've probably almost kind of always been queer theater because we've kind of almost been ahead of the gay theater thing.
We called it queer theater, and then someone on our board said we couldn't use the word queer because it made them upset.
progress.
We always meant queer. Yeah.
On a queer cast, and now you're on a queer cast.
Yeah.
But where do you think gay theater is right now? It may be in the U.S., and do you have any reference based on a European or...
I think we live, you know, in a very sophisticated city, in a very adventurous moment. I think that the future of the theater is how do we reach into communities in which what we do now that seems so commonplace would be seen as more radical, you know, that in which by representing these lives on stage, that it might be more important for us to start doing work that starts in Chicago and travels to Midwestern cities, that travels to smaller communities, to do plays that local community groups can come here, see the work, take it to their own communities, replicate work like the youth theater in smaller places. Not to me, I think we live in a slightly false sense of security that just because, you know, our world is so urbane, that the country is in itself deeply polarized. And where might we be useful in places like places where I'm from, you know, I'm from rural North Carolina. I spend half my time in rural Michigan, places where it's certainly not the same thing as it was 20 years ago, but but there are places, you know, I think those are interesting questions.
Right.
So that to me feels like the next stage for a truly national gay theater.
What do you think is the issue of our time that should be explored through art, whether it's theater or whether it's I don't know another medium.
It could be because I'm getting older and this play is really about this, but the question of family is really challenging. The question of... I talked to a friend of mine who I hope is one day going to run for office, who's a straight guy. He's like, how is it possible that that we are all complacent with this assault on our basic civil liberties? You know, and how is it possible that we live in a culture in which the very idea of a family in 37 states in the country is under threat? Where do we live? You know, why aren't we outraged? Why aren't we marching in the streets? And how, in a way, do those basic disenfranchisements malform the structures that make our lives possible? You know, why is it such a big deal if I want to have a baby? You know, in this play, that really is a crisis for this character, that he doesn't know how to make a family, and has an opportunity to, and it ends in a tragedy. But I know, you know, I'm writing from something very personal, but I think it is extendable to a major issue, which is, you know, if the next issue for us is how are we going to raise families of our own, mm-hmm. And how is the law going to be, you know, on our side?
And protect our families.
Yeah, it, as a way just guaranteed it's not special rights, but basic, that's what our country is supposed to be for. Right. And at the same time, the major issue, I think, you know, the next major issue is internationally, when are we going to really address the quote-unquote third world, the really terrifying conservatism. If you look what's happening in the Anglican Church, if you look what's happening, you know, the leader of Iran saying there are no gay people in Iran, it's you know, that's got to move to our to the center of our attention. That's a basic human rights issue that our generation is going to have to wrestle with.
So, if we go here to, I know that this has probably been, you know, when this show opens here, and we'll be playing, it's playing now, obviously,
yes.
Whether it's in previews or running, in its full run, it's obviously been a dream project of sorts. And I want to know, have you had a dream project in the back of your mind, like a story you've wanted to adapt that you either couldn't get the rights to, or, you know, or you haven't gotten there yet. It's one that's off in the distance, or is there a dream play that you want to just direct? And those are probably two separate projects.
Well, I am sort of working on a couple of new ideas. One, I'm going to collaborate with Matt Sachs, who I worked with on Clay.
And congratulations, LA was a big, huge hit.
We had a huge success with Clay in LA. It was really fun. And
I heard the cast of Heroes came, so that
the cast of Heroes came. That was cool. We had a lot of very good stars.
Like
John Legend wants to collaborate with Matt on something. It's really cool stuff. But Matt and I are working on trying to make a contemporary story out of a Shakespeare play. I don't want to say which one, but
okay.
But I'm really interested in music, particularly hip hop, and how to bring that into the music theater.
Mm-hmm.
Is interesting to me. And I think like the in terms of a play that I really want to do, I think I'm ready for some big, ambitious reinterpretations of classical plays that I don't think About Face was ready for many years ago, I think. But looking at a Marlowe play like Edward II and really diving in a way that feels fresh, or looking at the classic canon is very interesting to me right now. And also at opera. I'm thinking a lot about opera right now.
Mm. So Wedding Play is going to be playing, is playing now at the Steppenwolf Garage, which is just right next door to Steppenwolf Theater. It's actually located at 1624 North Halsted Street, running Wednesdays through Sundays until December 2nd. So get your tickets now, folks. It's a small, intimate space, and it's going to be a fantastic show. If you want tickets, you can call 312-335-1650 or visit aboutfacetheater.com, and that's easy. Just get tickets right online to come and see the show. Now tell me really quickly, do you think that shows occur in your life at a time for a reason? I mean, could this have been a play that you were grappling with 4 years ago, 3 years ago? I mean, do they always happen right when they're supposed to?
They don't always, but this one does. It really is, this is in many ways the end of an era for me, and the culmination of what I've learned over the last 15 years. And this play is feels so much like a kind of the heady culmination of what I've been learning about how to make plays, about how to tell stories, and about what's deeply personal and how to reveal it in everything else. Feels a little bit like I've been warming up for this play, and it's exciting. I think it's really cool. It's really interesting.
So what's next?
I'm directing Little Dog Laughed for About Face, which is thank God the polar opposite. It's really,
comedy
with a really brilliant cast, and we're doing it at the Center on Halsted, and it's sexy and funny and about Hollywood gays, which I think is really
closeted gays.
Hollywood closeted gays, and
it's pretty much like your own story.
It's mostly yes. I'm very deeply closeted.
Personally,
no one can listen to this,
are they? No. We only have two listeners, myself and Peter.
And my mother.
Three. Sometimes my dad, when he can stand my language. Other than that, it's pretty good.
Hi, Mom. So I'm doing that next. And then my show, Clay, is going to New York in the spring.
Fantastic. Well, everybody, keep up with Eric Rosen. He's got a lot going on. Come see Wedding Play, playing now at Steppenwolf Garage through December 2nd. For tickets, 312-335-1650, or just visit aboutfacetheater.com. Thanks, Eric.
Thanks, Amy. Come see my play.
And thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This show is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago, for the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
So that's our show. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. Please comment on our shows on our website and in iTunes.
The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it.
Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
The best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Podshow and Limelight.